You're listening to a podcast of spurious morality. Only now I'm thinking we should have done some kind of intergalactic song contest related intro to this one. Where's Connor? I bet he does a good Rylan impression. No, let's not inflict that upon the world. Let's just
hello and welcome to the 803rd episode of a podcast of spurious morality. We should have arranged the whole podcast so that this was the 803rd episode.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an oversight.
We should have recorded another sort of 670-something episodes in the last week just to get ourselves there. Yeah, we've slipped up there. Hello and welcome to a podcast of spurious morality. I'm Johnston, and with me again this week I have Mansour. Hello.
Hello.
And we're carrying on looking at the latest new current series of Doctor Who, and the most recent episode is the Intergalactic Song Contest. And I think expectations were quite high for this one. Like, it was obviously a bit of a high budget episode. It was, you know, a writer that has done some Doctor Who stuff before, but hasn't made it onto telly yet. And we were teased, Russell T Davies teased, that you really want to watch this one as quickly as possible so you don't get spoiled. And I think he was very, very right about that. This is the first one this series where I have kind of gone, yeah, I need to watch this as soon as possible, and kind of got to it on iPlayer as quickly as I can. And I'm glad I did, because I managed to get through to it without at least one thing being spoiled. I did kind of see the other spoiled on Facebook. It's my own fault for logging onto Facebook. But yeah, I think this one justified the hype. I think that we've actually got an episode that was built up beforehand. A lot of people were kind of expecting an awful lot from it, and I think it delivered. This is going to be a very spoilery chat. I've not done spoiler warnings for a while, but I kind of feel as though we should do one for this one. Like, you're listening to a podcast episode about the Intergalactic Song Contest. I'm hoping you've seen it by this point, but this is going to spoil a lot, because we got two big, big, big things. We got a lot of little things, but we got two huge things. One of those things was obviously the on-screen return of Susan, who I think we're going to see more from. She kind of appeared, she said a few lines, and then she disappeared. I hope that there's more to Susan's first proper appearance in the series since the Five Doctors to that. And we also found out that Mrs. Flood is the Rani and bi-generated into another Rani. So now we have two Ranis, and I can't believe neither of the next two episodes are not having their names changed to the two Ranis. Why would you not? Surely it's so tempting. It's very easy to just sort of dig into these things that I've mentioned. It's very easy to just kind of go, oh, it's the one where Susan comes back and it's got two Ranis at the end. But actually, there's the episode itself, which was sort of, in some ways, like standard political Doctor Who fare. But in other ways, it was really, really well done. It was a really engaging story. It was, you know, we had a good villain, a really well-played villain, bit of a tragic villain, you know, they were sort of in their own heads. They were freedom fighters. They were getting revenge. They were making a point. The idea that the Eurovision Song Contest carries on to be this big intergalactic affair with trillions of viewers, I thought was brilliant. Rylan as himself was a great bit of casting. The surprise cameo from Graham Norton was brilliant. It wasn't a surprise, actually. We were told about it, but the cameo from Graham Norton was brilliant. And, you know, him being the one that tells the Doctor that Earth was destroyed on the 24th of May or whenever it is. That was great. And everything fit together. Like, even talking about this episode now, it feels like I'm just kind of emptying a kitchen sink and then throwing the kitchen sink in as well. But actually, it all gelled together really nicely. It was a really good, really fun episode. I think the bit that's maybe not getting the amount of discussion that it deserves is the fact that the Doctor went pretty dark in this one. Like, this is the most sinister we've seen this Doctor. I'd say it's the most sinister we've seen a Doctor behave probably since Peter Capaldi, when he was running around shooting Time Lords. Really, really good. Like, Shooty got a couple of sinister moments, and they were good sinister moments. They were well-written sinister moments, really well-performed sinister moments. And I like just getting the odd reminder that the Doctor can go a bit dark, and the whole, you know, there's ice in my heart now speech was absolutely brilliant. Really felt like we got, it felt slightly like this Doctor's sort of Zygon inversion moment, you know, that moment. I think I mentioned it last week, actually, when we suddenly got this absolutely out of this world, this is what this actor's capable of performance at Capaldi. I feel like we've now got that with Shooty, which is just great. So I was a really big fan of this one. And I'm actually now at a stage where I've seen some of the people kind of ranking the episodes of this season, you know, putting this one certainly very close to the top, if not at the top. I can't do it. I think any of the last, certainly the last three episodes, are potentially the best episode of this series. It's just so good. Like, the quality we're getting this year is, it's some of the best, some of the consistent, most consistently brilliant Doctor Who we've had for quite a long time. I'm really enjoying it. What about you, Mansour? Where are you sort of on this episode and this series as a whole so far, I guess, because that's where I went with that.
It's interesting, because I probably feel quite similar to you with all the stuff you mentioned, but I've seen very mixed reactions to this episode. There are some people calling it, like the gym, just with, like, you know, YouTube reviews popping up in the last few days. I've seen some people calling it okay, and some people calling it like the worst episode of the season or this era. But yeah, it's definitely towards the top for me. Like, really good spectacle. I think that was another part of the expectation that was built up, like the whole sequence of the audience being sucked off into space, and at that point you don't know that they're going to be preserved or put into like stasis, because you don't know anything about that field. The way it's played is that those hundreds of thousands of people are just being slaughtered immediately in this huge incident. So the impact of that and just the visuals of that sequence were really striking. Like a lot of things, there's like elements that feel very familiar from RTD1, like you know, meeting those side characters who conveniently play or conveniently have the skills to rise above just being a sort of standard ordinary person and being really vital to the plot. That was all great. You mentioned the politics of it as well, I think, and that's one of the things that I've seen people criticize it for as much as praise it for, with a lot of people saying that it was an oversimplification or a ham-fisted handling of politics and a bit black and white, and the resolution was too neat, and I can see all those things, but It's like when people are making all these comparisons between like Lucky Day and Adolescence, and there are some interesting comparisons to be drawn, but like one of these is a major BBC One show aimed at the whole family, and one of them is a Netflix drama that is a bit more niche. It's gotten a lot of attention, but is definitely more niche and is something that will have a much more selective audience. The fact that Doctor Who, as this big mainstream flagship show, can even start to engage with these types of ideas is, I think, itself something. Like, yes, it could be more nuanced. There could be, you know, if you had a 3 or 4 hours to explore this stuff, you could delve into it with much more sort of political literacy and detail. But the fact that it's just raising that, it's saying words like genocide and did they use that word in this episode? I'm trying to remember. I'm probably thinking about it because there was a lot of use of the word in the UK Parliament today.
I think it was used.
I think so. But I mean, that's definitely how it's played. Like, even if the word isn't used, like, you know, ethnic cleansing or genocide, that's what's... Or exploitation to the point where it is effectively that. We're just stripping that planet of resources. And this was written a long time ago because, you know, in political terms, like... But all the stuff that's going on today, like I said, the day that we're recording this, you may be listening to it far in the future, but there was a lot of discussion about that word, genocide, in the UK Parliament. It's something that is really relevant and unfortunately continues to be relevant over the last few decades. So yeah, I think politically, yeah, could have been more... you could have had like a lot more detail and nuance there, but I think it's a massive thing that it even goes into that area, and I think does an okay job of it in the constraints of like this big flagship BBC One show. Okay, so what else was going on? What else did you talk about? Because you covered a lot of stuff at the start. Like, there was the Doctor as well. You said that was one of the things that stood out to you about the Doctor's turn.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like that. And again, like I mentioned, Joy to the World and that moment he has there. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that this season. I feel like, again, I think they were filmed pretty close to each other. I think we talked about this before, but like it feels like in season two, or from Joy to the World onwards, that this Doctor, you're seeing a lot more layers to him and you're seeing a lot more depth beyond that, like, super hyper happy exterior, and that's still there. It's like with Peter Davison, where you see those layers to him where he's not just this relentlessly pleasant, friendly character. There's that irritation and sharpness underneath the surface, and I feel like we're sort of getting far enough in to see those sorts of layers to this Doctor now. And yeah, I think they're really interesting, and just how far he goes, like, because we've had moments where the Doctor has kind of been pushed or gotten to that point with the whole Time Lord Victorious arc, and was it Solomon in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship? That one stood out quite a bit as well, where he was he deliberately sending him to his death on that spaceship?
Yes.
And I mean, if you look at it literally, what he does to the family of blood is much worse. That's like unending, eternal torture and imprisonment. But he talks here about, you know, hurting him like millions of times for all of the people that he was threatening. And the way it is played in the scene, it goes on for a long time. It's not just like once or twice to make the point of the Doctor getting to the point of violence. How many times is it? Like 4, 5, 6, 7? It's like he does it again and again and again. And I thought it was interesting. Belinda's reaction to it was interesting as well, because she comes in and she's quite rightly shocked by it, but she doesn't actually challenge him that much on it afterwards. It's, maybe they don't get time before the TARDIS doors blow in, but it's... What did you think of Belinda's reaction to seeing how far the Doctor had gone?
I was certainly expecting a conversation that we never quite got.
Yeah.
There was the line about, you know, you do scare me sometimes or something like that, which felt like it was going to go into it. You know, it felt like there was another line that was going to come after that. Like, you know, you can't do that again, Doctor. That was that was too far. You're not judge, jury, executioner. And we didn't get there. But I can't immediately remember whether we didn't get there because they were interrupted by Graham Norton or whether we didn't get there because it just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I wanted a bit more of that. I mean, like with Donna in, is it Runaway Bride? It's like a much more deliberate moment of challenging him and shouting at him to stop.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be quite as dramatic as that, but I wanted something afterwards to, and it was a bit, it was all a bit mixed up with the fact that this was played as the episode where Belinda is starting to have fun and, like, you know, chooses to stay. And I feel like there was an opportunity to do something with that, of like, she's at that point of starting to like the Doctor and to see how great he is. And then this could have like pulled the rug out underneath of that, but it wasn't quite sort of followed through in as clear a way as I wanted.
And it's kind of where this series felt as though it was going at the start. Those first couple of episodes, first few episodes, we really did have quite a bit about the relationship between these two characters, and it seems to have been, it's not forgotten, it's still there, and we do, you know, we are getting lines like "you scared me" and that kind of thing, but at the start of the series, I'd have expected this episode to have a little bit more of a gut punch in relation to these two characters, and yeah, you're right, it just wasn't, it wasn't not there, but it wasn't quite there. It's like we thought about it, and then that was enough.
Yeah, and it's like you were saying last week, I think, that we've only got so much time with Belinda, and we're into finale territory now. So, again, worry slightly that it's a missed opportunity to give her story a bit more weight. I really like the performance and the character. I feel like more interested and engaged in the character, and not a criticism of Millie Gibson, but just like I feel like Belinda's got more interesting stuff to her in terms of the character. But yeah, I'm seeing these sort of missed opportunities to go a bit further with her as well.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that they, I'm hoping that there's a moment in the finale to kind of pause and, you know, discuss this kind of thing. I hope it's not just a case of, you know, at the end of the finale, okay, Belinda, we've got you home now. That's what you wanted. See you. Bye. And then that'd be it. Like, that, there needs to be some conclusion to this that isn't just, okay, Belinda's home now.
But, you know, that list of things to wrap up that we talked about last week, that's just gotten longer because now we have two Ranis. But is Kid potentially coming back? That seems to be the way it was played, like, unless that's for like a future series.
Yeah, I get that that might be more of a "this villain will return," think Cassandra and that kind of thing.
Possibly. But then Russell T Davies has also said that this unholy trinity that's being referred to, the Rani only counts as one of that, yes, of that trinity.
Yes, they're still both the Rani. So,
because I was joking about the Rani in a previous episode, and I had no idea she was really going to appear, but then she turned out to be real. So now I'm worried that like Omega is going to turn up next week, and just with zero introduction and 2 seconds of a classic episode as a flashback, as if that helps people understand who he is. If they haven't seen all his previous TV stories.
And I'll be honest, I really don't think Arkham Infinity can be saved by a 75-minute edit with a bit of CGI thrown in. That, then again, can Time and the Rani? oh my God, are we getting Time and the Rani?
Well, Time and Rani had some of, like, the for the time, like, really impressive special effects. So I don't think it needs... I guess you could cut it down, but... Yeah. Maybe Mark of the Rani.
You could probably shave out the entirety of the second episode of Time and the Rani and not lose too much.
Yeah. So maybe that could make a Tales of the TARDIS episode.
I don't know. I like to think they'll do that again. You know, I like to think they will go, okay, let's watch Mark of the Rani, Time of the Rani. If it is Omega, let's watch Three Doctors and Ark of Infinity if we have to.
Was the last year's Pyramids of Mars, Tales of the TARDIS, was that announced beforehand? Or was that...
I think Tales of the TARDIS was announced, but I didn't think we knew what it was going to be, because I think there was speculation that it was going to be basically a clip show of the series so far. And then Sutek came back and immediately we all went, oh, right, it's Pyramids of Mars then. And then they announced it pretty quickly after that it was going to be, I think.
But we don't have any slot for a new episode of Tales of the TARDIS announced at the moment.
And I think we'd know by now.
Mm.
I don't know how far in advance they announced the... But then again, it doesn't necessarily need to be announced. It doesn't need to be broadcast. It can just go on iPlayer without any warning.
Yeah.
Like Pyramids had a BBC Four broadcast, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did, yeah. I think that was around that time there was like something on BBC One, Two... and four, I don't know about three, but yeah, like with the War Games, there was like basically some new-ish Doctor Who on multiple BBC channels.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Just going back to the point you were making about sort of politics before, and it kind of makes me laugh that some people are saying it didn't go into the politics enough, because all I've heard for the best part of a decade now is there's too much politics in Doctor Who. And then the moment an episode sort of doesn't really go into the politics, oh, well, that wasn't political enough.
Oh, I think it might be... enough
politics.
Well, I think the reason for that might be is the criticism is coming from a different direction, so it's not like the sort of Conrads and right-wing grifters. It's actually more like some sort of left-leaning people who are saying... this oversimplified some really important stuff and it should have...
We could have done something with that.
Yeah.
No, I agree. But yeah, it just shows that not everyone is always going to be happy. And I think there are too many people who seem to think that they should be the person that's happy. You know, the I've watched this show for 45, 50, whatever years crowd, and therefore I know exactly what it should be.
Like slight warning for, I think they're like officially released production stills, but there's stuff coming out about the finale that's making me increasingly think that it's going to go in that direction. The fact that we've got Conrad set up as sort of representing that type of person who would be at the sort of more toxic end of Doctor Who fandom if he wasn't pushing, you know, political conspiracies. And then you've got a production still of him holding a Doctor Who book. So, and we've had fans brought up like the sort of less toxic kind in Lux. I wonder if it is going to get into that, this thing of not just Doctor Who is fictional, but like turning the mirror on fans and the audience, which kind of, you know, stuff like Love and Monsters and other things have done in the past, but I wonder if that's going to be the big thing about the finale.
It's going to be interesting to sort of see how Conrad fits into this. I know it's like an unholy trinity and all that kind of thing, but the Rani working with a right-wing podcaster, and you know, we're told that, you know, I've seen it mentioned that, you know, that this isn't just character, this is the Rani, this is an experiment, there's something very Rani-ish going on here. Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to how Conrad fits into all of it.
What's called the reality? No, the penultimate is Wishworld, and then the final is the reality war. Conrad had that line about denying the Doctor's reality. Is there something about the Rani's experiment allowing her to manipulate reality and rewrite the Doctor's history to... And maybe that's where this ice in his heart thing is coming from. It's like that's the first bit of the Doctor
this
changing.
This sounds like exactly her plan from Time in the Rani. Like, the third member of the Unholy Trinity is a gigantic brain. I'm calling it now. You heard it here first, and probably last.
So yeah, maybe the or maybe it's the Valiant. Maybe it is the Doctor is the third member, and Conrad's going to turn the Doctor into the Valiant.
You see, if it was Moffat, that would definitely be it. The Doctor would be the extra bit of evil. That's very Moffat-y, but I'm not sure Russell T. Davis would do that. Interesting. Mm. I think it's going to be something pantheon-y, or, you know, Omega's in control of all the gods now. You know, we'll get a clip
master,
from the three Doctors where he goes, "I should have been a god."
Yeah, and like in extended media, Omega's been much more like treated as a god or god figure, like the novels and I think audios as well. But there's also the Master, whose gold tooth was trapped inside the Toymaker's tooth, and that's never come back. So, are they going to pop up?
Yeah, I know. I've always taken that as a thing that's just gonna be used when they need it to. Like, there you go, the Master. There's an easy way to bring him back if we need it.
Yeah,
we'll see. So we've kind of touched on this, or, you know, the next point of discussion was going to be the Doctor in this episode and him, you know, him going a bit evil, well, not evil, a bit dark, a bit sinister. And we've kind of covered that, you know, it's what he does. But it's interesting that the thing that pulls him back is visions of Susan. And Carol Ann Ford's back. This is proper Susan. You know, we've not regenerated Susan. We've not. And I honestly do not believe that this is the last we've seen of her. Like, there's no way you bring her back for the sake of those few little appearances that don't really quite make all that much sense. So where do we think the Susan thing is going?
I don't know, but yeah, I agree she's coming back. And again, like in Unleashed, she was wearing what looked like a different costume from the ones in the shots that we saw, and I think it would not be a surprise if she's back. But so Susan was the one who definitely snapped him out of that moment where he was about to be frozen. But I'm just thinking about how it played out towards the end of the episode, because didn't he ignore her, like when she was telling him to stop? I feel like it was something else that actually made him stop in the end.
I think it took her a few times telling him to stop, but eventually he did.
Yeah, and so I don't know, maybe she's going to have some role in, like, rather than it being just like happy reunion, she's going to be back and it's going to be her stopping the Doctor. Or it's going to be that... like just her in person is the thing that pulls him back from the edge.
But yeah, and certainly hope.
Yeah,
I'm curious as to how all of this fits together. Like,
yeah, I've got no idea.
Yeah, it feels like we've just got a lot of pieces on the board randomly at this point. Like the Doctor and Belinda are on the board. Earth's been destroyed is on the board. The Rani, both Ranis are on the board. Conrad's on the board. Ruby's on the board. Unit's on the board. Mel's on the board. Susan's on the board. Like, how do these pieces play together? What's it all going to? It kind of feels like where we're up to with Avengers Doomsday at the moment, where we've got a lot of chairs with names on the back and no context. Yeah. and yeah, I'm just okay, all of this is going to be in the finale. There's a lot to fit, a hell of a lot to fit in.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison, but like even more so with this finale, because with Doomsday, yeah, they'll do some heavy adaptation, but we've got the original comic stories to get a sense of how it will play out and how all those characters will form into teams and come up against Doctor Doom. But yeah, with this finale, I've got no, and again, it's like we're saying about before about the second half of this season, it's quite nice to go in not knowing how it's all going to play out. Because like with season one, we just had fewer elements, and it was like the stuff about Ruby on one side, and then Sutek has this late in the day reveal, and those two things were tied together just about. I can't see all these like these dozen different things you listed, how they're all going to be wrapped up in a neat little package.
But we do know they're all there.
Yeah.
And there's other stuff as well. Like we know that Susan Twist's in it. Susan Triad character's in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, they announced she was coming back and she's not been in it so far. So that's what I'm getting. Just the more I think about it, the more I sort of go, hang on, that's in there as well, isn't it? And, oh, we know we've got Poppy from Space Babies as well.
Yeah, that's a big one as well.
Yeah, the more I think about this, the more there is going to be in the next 2 weeks. And actually, we know nothing about the plot. We just know a lineup of what's in it. Very curious sort of how any of this is going to fit together.
What was the Rani's line? Let battle commence.
But yes.
That doesn't really... Like, with who? Like, so this is the other thing. Like, you know, Mrs. Flood has this complete switch of being really meek and subservient after the bi-generation. I don't buy that at all, because you think back to the way that she was talking when she was with Cherry and when they were dusted. Like,
yeah.
So when the David Tennant's 14th Doctor bi-generated, he doesn't become a different character. It's played as it's a split, and he is the same regeneration splitting off to the side. So if it's the same logic with Mrs. Flood, she's not going to go from someone who's talking like she can go up against gods to then just being this really meek person. I think there's a lot of like sort of barely hidden disdain or superiority, and she's just playing the new Rani, or giving her the sense that she's this meek person.
Yes, I get the same impression.
And that leaves the option open of, is the Mrs. Flood regeneration of the Rani actually on the Doctor's side? Because there was hints of that with previous Mrs. Flood stuff. The way she would say, was it the same episode when they get de-dusted? She talks about the Doctor being, you know, that clever boy or something.
Yeah, because everyone started going, oh, it's Clara.
Yeah, and that's not the way that the Rani in her traditional camp evil persona would talk about the Doctor. So maybe this is like an aberration regeneration of the Rani where, well, it's like Missy and like she's...
Or a Lumiette.
Yeah, and... Yeah. So I feel like there could be something really interesting going on with her, which I hope there is, because I hope we get more of Anita Dobson beyond just like following the new Rani around, who looks really great as well. But I hope Anita Dobson doesn't get too sidelined, which is a risk with these dozen different plot elements again to link up.
At this point, I do sort of wonder if we're going into a Doctor Light episode again. Like the maybe not like completely Doctor Light, but I'm thinking the Stolen Earth, how it takes the Doctor the whole episode to actually get to where everything's going on. And it's sort of a bit more led by UNIT and Torchwood and Sarah Jane. I kind of wonder if maybe that's, we're going to get that as a first episode, you know, the Doctor trying to get to Earth, and maybe UNIT are leading things a little bit, and, you know, by the time the Doctor gets to Earth, everything's already gone dreadful.
Oh yes, UNIT as well, like, yeah, are we going to have space here for more setup of the spin-off? Or is that just going to be its own thing and kind of not have too much of a hard link into the main show?
Or at least the continuation of where Lucky Day left off.
Yeah, because I think things were said by the writer or Russell T. Davis about that having important links to the spin-off, like the public reaction to UNIT.
Yeah, so maybe there's a little bit more of a look at that. Hard to say, but it's, I do like where it's all going. I just hope it can stick the landing. And I did find that sort of last year's finale, I really liked the first part. I thought it really built up suspense. We had that whole extended sequence in the time window, and
yeah, that was good. Yeah.
It built up and it built up and it built up, and it was really tense, and it and I just don't think we're going to have time for that this time, because there's just so much there. Like the majority of that episode was trying to figure out who Ruby's mum was. That was a very, very big chunk of that episode. We kind of had Mel doing a bit of undercover stuff as well, but essentially, yeah, and we're not going to get that this time. We're not going to have time for that big build-up if everything that we've just listed is all going to get a decent sort of slice of the cake.
Yeah.
I sound like I'm going into this finale really negative. I'm not. I think it's great that all of these things are sort of together. We kind of know what the ingredients are, but not what the final dish is. And we know that Russell T. Davis can handle a finale where there are a lot of characters that need serving. Like, we've done that. We had it with Stolen Earth and Journey's End. And if this ends up being half as good as Stolen Earth and Journey's End, we're up for a pretty good finale.
I'm really curious. Like, I'm sort of very cautious about all of this being wrapped up in a satisfied way, but also really fascinated as to what it will look like.
Yeah, it's that how for me. Like, how is this all? How does it all fit together? Because it just feels like a lot of random pieces at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is good, you know. We're sat here talking about it, speculating, so that's, it's kind of done its thing. It's the old playground discussion analogy, isn't it, and that kind of thing. So it has done its job. It's got us talking about what it's supposed to have us talking about. But really, I'm really enjoying going into a Doctor Who finale with absolutely no idea where it's going.
Yeah.
And this could be the first time. This could genuinely be the first finale where I've not really known what's coming at all. You know, everything else, we've had leaks, we've had spoilers, we've had set reports, we've had, you know, we've been told stuff, we've had stuff going into it. This time there's, it's nothing. Like, I'd struggle to even tell you where it was set. Like, I assume Earth on the day that Earth gets destroyed. Like, that's the best guess, but we don't know how it gets destroyed, who destroys it, why it gets destroyed, how it links to any of the things that we listed before.
Yeah, so, oh, yeah. So the one thing we haven't talked about much is the music in this episode.
To avoid that.
I thought it was pretty authentic, like,
yeah,
picking the sort of, like, you know, the sort of major types of Eurovision song. It felt very authentic to that. I'd be curious to, because we didn't get them all play out in full, if they do a sort of mini soundtrack release like they did with the Goblin Song single, I'd be curious to hear them in full. But you weren't as you weren't impressed. It sounds like
you just want that full version of Dug-a-Doo, don't you? I mean, you and the majority of other people I've spoken to about this episode over the last few days.
No, and I like the first one as well. The one just before the everyone gets sucked off. Like that sounded good, and. Yeah, I'd just be curious to hear them play out in full. Like I preferred this to. There's always a twist at the end.
Like, yes, yeah. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. The music was entirely sort of authentic to the different kind of styles and songs you get at Eurovision. Totally was. It was very, very well done. There was certainly a better understanding of Eurovision than the Devil's Chord had of the Beatles, that kind of thing. It's not particularly my genre of music. You know, I'll sit and watch Eurovision and have one too many to drink and a bit of a laugh with it like everybody else, but I'm never going to be the person sat there going, I'm actually going to get this song and listen to it normally. Do people do that? Is that a thing? Are people having Eurovision soundtracks?
Yeah, I think they definitely do like full Eurovision CD soundtracks. They used to do them. And there'll be digital ones now.
I'll never forget when Sam Ryder with, you know, Spaceman, which did quite well, obviously, UK entry did quite well. I'll never forget the massive mistake he made when it came to titling his album. Because it was There's Nothing But Spaceman, which it's not what you meant, is it, Sam? But the reviewers picked up on it. It was like you say, it was perfectly authentic. It genuinely felt like this is what Eurovision is going to be if it still exists in many, many, many years' time. And, I'm amazed, you know, considering most new Doctor Who has been broadcast on the same evening. Well, most series have had an episode broadcast on the same evening as Eurovision, I should say. I'm amazed they've not done this before. It's such an obvious thing to do when you think about it. But in the same way, I'm kind of glad that it's happened now, because this episode would not have looked as good 5 years ago, let alone 15, 20.
Yeah, definitely.
This was another one where we saw, you know, the Disney budget. I feel the need to put a little TM next to it every time it has a Disney budget. But yeah, this is another episode where we definitely saw that Disney budget doing its thing. This is how Doctor Who should look.
Yeah, like I said, that sequence near the start, like really early on, that was one of the most impressive. But just generally throughout, like all the visuals outside the space station, all of that was really impressive.
Yeah. It was great. So, is there anything else you want to add or discuss or anything like that at all?
Yeah, like we talked a lot about what this is setting up for the finale. Belinda, the Doctor, the villain themselves, and again, coming back to the fact that, you know, if you had lots more time, you could flesh things out. I thought he was in between Conrad and the guy from Robot Revolution in terms of depth and complexity. I feel like Robot Revolution guy is towards the bottom. Conrad's the most interesting and layered. And then this guy is sort of sitting in the middle, where he's got some sort of charisma and depth to him, but it still is a bit he doesn't really go on any sort of journey or change, and maybe that's the point of his character.
He's kind of already been on the journey at the start, and
yeah,
what goes on in this episode are the actions following that. But yeah, you're right, there was never any kind of moment of regret. Like, the episode ended with him in exactly the same place as it started, which he kind of did with Conrad. But I think Conrad, it's, you can look at Conrad and you can see a real person. We see these people in the media at the time. You know, you can.
Yeah, he's got the messiness. Yeah. Like, he's got the messiness to him as well of, like, does he actually believe this, or is he just a grifter? And it's played with enough complexity that you could read it either way at times.
Yeah. But Conrad is not a pleasant one, but very much human.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, whereas, yeah, the villain in this, I've actually forgotten his name. Kid,
yeah.
Yeah. Automatically, Kid wasn't a human and therefore lost all of those links to real people and real situations and real personas. It lost all of that. You know, while where Kid was coming from was definitely, you know, a similar place to where a lot of humans are, you did sort of lose a level of character complexity there, because we were only told quite briefly, actually, about what had happened to the home world, and there's hints about how the race is persecuted, but again, there's no real, it doesn't go into it at all.
It's sort of there, but, like, again, like with the Belinda confrontation, it's there, but, like, could have been made more, because isn't there a line about where his name comes from, that it's not because of a baby goat, it's because he was his parents were killed, or he was taken away from his parents before he was named or something.
Yeah.
There's little, like, if you look closely, there are those very sort of dark hints and layers there. But actually, like, his accomplice was the one who I think had a bit more depth to her, in the sense that she seemed conflicted.
Certainly more conflicted, yeah. Like, she went on a bit of a journey, but still kind of ended up in the same place.
Yeah.
Nevertheless. Yeah, it's definitely one of those episodes where the Doctor's presence did actively make everything better. You know, it's very easy for the Doctor to not actually have that much impact on what's going on, whereas on this one, everybody would have been screwed without the Doctor.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, no, you're right. There just wasn't quite... We did need that little bit more. There wasn't quite that Conrad level of... But, you know, Lucky Day had... It did take time to explore Conrad, and it did explore him on a very human level, and he didn't particularly interact with the Doctor much. It was Ruby, you know, another human character who we have spent a lot of time with. That was kind of his main point of contact for the audience. Yeah. But definitely, you know, definitely not a bad villain, definitely not a forgettable villain, but definitely a villain we have seen in Doctor Who quite a lot before, I think. But yeah, you know, the motivation was there. We know what it was. You can kind of look at it and go, yeah, see, I can see how he's got there. He just didn't really go anywhere throughout the course of the episode.
And like the Disney money stuff, this is where, like, the new budget lines up with the storytelling, maybe, because yes, we've seen characters like him in Doctor Who loads of times, but we've never seen their actions or the impact of their actions play out in, I think, quite as much sort of, like, quite horrific detail, like, you know, all those people seemingly being killed. You don't see that sort of killing on that scale in most Doctor Who.
No, absolutely not. I did kind of wonder, when it happened, I kind of wondered, okay, you know, is the Doctor going to be the only survivor here? You know, is this going to be have we just watched the biggest death count in all Doctor Who ever? Or, which, you know, we've had the suggestion of mass death in Doctor Who. You know, think back to Parting of the Ways, where the Daleks bombed the Earth and literally reshaped continents.
Yeah, but that's from space. It's like, and you have things like
little computer graphic of continents changing shape.
Exactly. Yeah.
But no, that it would have been pretty massive to have just left it. And I noticed the line of dialogue, "They're all alive," went in pretty quickly. Like, there was obviously the immediate tension when you saw everybody lift up.
Yeah.
But it was the very next scene where we got, "Oh, they are still alive, by the way, guys. It's okay."
Which I think is okay. Again, it's like,
yeah,
a show aimed at the whole family. You don't want little kids to feel that, like, hundreds of thousands of people have been slaughtered and then just leave them with that for half the episode.
Yeah. Like, if it was Big Finish, it would be right at the end. Oh, by the way, there's still a gravity bubble. Everyone's okay.
And if it was the New Adventures, billions of people would just stay dead, and that would just be part of the Doctor's character now.
Oh, if it was New Adventures, Kid would have succeeded and the Doctor would have let it happen because maybe he was right. I don't know. all right. Well, I think we've covered it. I think we've got it there. It was a great episode. It is a great series. I'm really looking forward to talking about the next two episodes because I have no idea at this point what it is we're going to be talking about. And that's quite exciting. So Doctor Who's got me excited. I think it has this whole series, to be honest. I'm invested. I'm wanting to watch it. I'm, you know, watching it at 8 o'clock when possible, that kind of thing. As I said at the start, this is the first one where I've kind of gone, yeah, I want to watch this as quickly as possible. Everything else I've kind of watched when I can. Always on the Saturday, of course. But this is the one where I've kind of gone, yeah, I need to watch this now. And I think that's how I'm going to feel on this coming Saturday as well. And the Saturday after that, it's going to have to be 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I've booked it for the cinema, and I don't think it's feasible to try and avoid spoilers for Wishworld. So I think it will have to be at 8 a.m. viewing for Wishworld and then rewatch it in the cinema. It feels insane to try and avoid for the whole week.
Well, I also need you to watch Wishworld straight away so we can talk about it. it would be really interesting trying to talk about an episode with you that you'd not seen without spoiling it, which is not a challenge. I think we should try sometime.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we shall leave it there. But thanks, as ever, for joining me, Mansoor. It's been really good discussing this.
A pleasure.
And, we'll be back to talk about Wishworld next week when hopefully we'll know what we're talking about. We'll have something to talk about and hopefully some of the speculation that we've kind of suggested here will be proved to be right or wrong.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Omega next week, aren't we? Like, we actually are. Gee. Yeah, we'll see. Well, thanks very much for listening, everybody, and we will be back for more Spodcasting soon. Goodbye now.